You are listening to episode 161 of This is Type 1. Before we get started, I have a shout out for our patrons on Ko-Fi. That would be Diane and Ryan, so thank you so much for supporting the show. Today we're talking with Dr. Mark Heyman, clinical psychologist, certified diabetes care and education specialist, and author of Diabetes Sucks, and You Can Handle It. Dr. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Tell us who you are and the story of your diagnosis.
So I am Dr. Mark Heyman. I'm a diabetes psychologist, and my work focuses on helping people with type 1 diabetes navigate and deal with the emotional challenges of diabetes. I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes 23 years ago. It was in June of 1999, and I was a third-year college student. The very end of my third year of college, and I was, you know, just busy, like most college students are. But I got sick. And at first I was like, I'm just tired. This will pass. I think all of us who are diagnosed after like age 15 have felt that way at some point. This will pass at some point soon. But unfortunately, we know how the story ends. It didn't pass. And I got sicker and sicker and sicker. And I was just, you know, trying to get through the quarter, trying to just get to the end, very end of the quarter so I could go on summer break and go to France for the summer. And I was so scared that if I go to the doctor for whatever reason, the doctor would tell me that I couldn't go to France. So I put it off. And eventually I just didn't have a choice. I was not well and went to the doctor and was diagnosed with diabetes at the beginning of June. But the good news is about three weeks later, I got on a plane and flew to France, spent the summer in Paris after my diagnosis, and that was quite an adventure.
So how did all of that work with taking care of your diabetes while you were in a foreign country just 3 weeks after being diagnosed?
I think that ignorance is bliss, to tell you the truth. I had an awesome doctor who basically told me, you can do whatever you want with diabetes. And I think that I took that seriously, although I really didn't know what I was doing. I just went and she gave me, if I remember correctly, I was on regular NPH and she gave me some general guidelines on how to take insulin. I don't even think it was related to my food. I think it was just, you take this many units of NPH in the morning and this many units at night. And then with every meal you take, I don't remember what it was, 3 units of insulin, of regular insulin, and call it good. And I emailed her every couple of days with my blood sugars and I survived. And I remember some pretty scary instances though, because I was just learning about diabetes. I didn't know anything about it. And I didn't really know much about low blood sugar, except for when it happened to me, it was pretty scary. And I remember one time I was walking in the middle of Paris and my blood sugar went low and I had to get something. I didn't have anything with me. I didn't know I was supposed to have some stuff with me. And I was walking through the streets of Paris and I needed a soda because I was, my blood sugar was low. And so I went to a vending machine and I had a handful of coins, but I had no idea how to count them. It's just shoving coins into the machine. Eventually I got the soda and it worked out okay. But you know, this was before the euro. This was using the franc, and it was confusing, especially when you were low and not knowing how to count in French coins.
Oh yeah. I kind of had a similar experience when I was in, I think it was in London. Mm-hmm. I went on 2 back-to-back tours with my cousin, like those walking tours. And in between them, I like raced across the city with the tour guide so he could get to the next one. And by the time we got to the starting point, my blood sugar was 36. And I did not have enough glucose tablets. So I like hightailed into a boot store and got a straight Dr. Pepper and chugged it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think that, you know, I survived. And I, looking back on it, I think it's kind of crazy that I went. I'm glad that I did, but I think if I actually knew what I was being myself into, I may have had second thoughts about it.
So definitely ignorance is bliss. Did you have any family history with diabetes?
No, I have a couple second cousins who have diabetes, but no direct family history at all. So this is all new to me.
Over the years, have you figured out if you have any favorite things about type 1?
I love the people. You know, I've met so many people who... there's no way I would have met them otherwise. And I talk to people with diabetes almost every day. And I probably talk to more people with diabetes every week than I do who don't have diabetes. So it's just, I feel like people with type 1 diabetes have a personality. And we get each other, but also we just have a cool personality. So I like that. I like excuse to eat candy. I was slow and I had a Twix. Probably wouldn't have had that otherwise, but it's a good excuse. And I mean, and my work, I mean, I love my work. And there's no way I would have had any clue to go into this field or probably any interest going into this field if I didn't have diabetes.
But yeah, so you have way more exposure to people with type 1 diabetes than most other people, I think. Mm-hmm. So with that, do you have any kind of unexpected least favorite things about type 1?
I don't know that they're unexpected. I just think that they're probably the regular stuff, you know, having to eat when you don't want to. Probably my least favorite. The calories I'm having to eat because I'm low just make me so mad. I got to have a Twix. So I guess I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth here. I think that another one of my least favorites, and that's not something that I deal with a lot, but I see this a lot in people that I work with, is just kind of the way that it weighs people down. And it really makes them feel trapped. It makes them feel like they cannot live the life that they want to live. And I don't believe that's true, but it's this perception that we have developed for ourselves individually, but also I think as a culture of somehow we are limited in what we can do. And really my mission is to make sure people don't feel that way, or do my best to help people not feel that way.
Would you say that's a hallmark of feeling burnt out?
I think so. I think it's a matter of just feeling, you know, weighed down and like you have a weight glued to your body and feeling like you cannot go. And then there's like the physical manifestation of it. There's no real physical manifestation of it, but I kind of feel like I kind of see it as being weighed down, but also then like mentally trapped. And I think that burnout is definitely a part of that, and definitely works into that, because when people feel burnt out, they just feel like they're done and that there's a big wall in front of them. And there's not a wall, but in their minds and in their reality, there is.
We've seen that burnout especially it's individual among different people, and different people have different definitions of it. But mm-hmm. if you had 10 seconds with a burned out diabetic, what would mm-hmm. be the first thing you would say to them?
You're normal. Everyone with diabetes feels burned out sometimes. And there's nothing wrong with you.
Oh, that's so good. I don't think we've ever had somebody say that.
We pathologize burnout. Like it's something like you've done something wrong. It's something that you have to fix. And of course, we don't want to feel burnt out. Of course, we want to find ways to not feel that way. But if we somehow feel that we're deficient or abnormal because we're feeling burnt out, that just makes you feel even more burnt out.
Yeah, it's just adding stress on top of stress on top of stress. And so you're judging yourself for judging yourself. And then you just end up in a whole cycle, which sucks.
Exactly. But as I said before, like I talk to people with diabetes every day or almost every day. And I don't know anybody. I've never met anybody who has never felt burnt out.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly there are degrees of burnout, but everyone feels burnt out at some point in their lives or with diabetes. Yeah.
Going back to your endocrinologist letting you go to France after mm-hmm. 3 weeks of having diabetes, I don't think many endocrinologists are as supportive as that right off the bat. So how can doctors be more emotionally supportive of patients who are newly diagnosed with type 1?
I think that doctors tend to be very cut and dry and very numbers oriented. And I think that at least in the beginning of people's diagnosis, I think that giving people some slack and letting them not trapping them in, at least from a messaging point of view, as to what diabetes means. You can go in and you can say, well, you know, you need to take care of yourself and do this, 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 and this, you know, so all of a sudden burning people out because they're like overwhelmed with this, this, and this, which they have no idea what those things are or what those things mean. And then if you don't do those things, then you're going to develop these really awful complications, which then just scares people and weighs them down even more. And so I think taking a gradual approach, of course, we want people to be safe. We want people to be healthy, but also we want people to learn that they can be safe and healthy while also living their lives. And so I think that in the beginning, we want to bring people's blood sugars down and get them in a normal range, but at the same time, not get people to a point where they're so micromanaging their own diabetes that it gets in their way.
Okay. It's kind of like you get a fire hose of information in the face and then no follow-up. And then you feel like you're just drowning in all that information.
Yeah. I mean, I got an email this morning from a woman whose husband was diagnosed this week, she told me. And she said she's looking for a podcast episode to listen to. So if you have any, let me know. I'll send them to her. But I sent her some of my podcast episodes. But she was saying that they went to the hospital. They got all their information from the ER doctor, I assume. And then they were given a bag of stuff, insulin and test strips, I think, and sent on their way. And they have an appointment with the endocrinologist at the end of August. It just shocked me. And talk about feeling over. And now, I don't know who these people are at all besides the email that I got. But I assume now they are sitting there on their computers, like scouring the internet and hearing all kinds of horror stories, trying to figure out what to do and feeling overwhelmed and burnt out. And then let's say when they see the endocrinologist in a month and the endocrinologist is awesome, but they started off the life with diabetes with this like overwhelm and this feeling of now I can't do this, this, and this. And that those things stick with you.
Yeah. And on top of that, I'll see people join Facebook groups saying, I just got diagnosed today, or I just got diagnosed this week. Mm-hmm. And they're in the same boat as that lady where they have an endocrinologist appointment in like a month or 2 months. And they're just kind of trying to find all this information on their own. And then they run the risk of getting misinformation from people mm-hmm. who are probably giving pseudo medical advice when they're not supposed to.
Yeah. I saw somebody recently. I'm not sure what story is worse, but I saw someone recently who was diagnosed with diabetes by their primary care doctor. Okay. But then the doctor said, oh, you don't need any kind of mealtime insulin. Just take 25 units of Lantus a day. And so he did. And then he goes back to the doctor a couple months later and the doctor's like, oh, you're doing great. His A1C was like 11%. And then, he comes to see me for different reasons. And I say, well, you know, tell me about your diabetes management routine. And he's like, well, I take 25 units of, I think, like Lantus a day. I was like, and what about at meals? He's like, I don't take mealtime insulin. I was like, why not? I was like, you need to go back to the doctor and ask him for some. So he does. Doctor says no.
What?
He had to end up going to urgent care to get a prescription for rapid acting insulin. And it was like unbelievable.
Oh my gosh.
But his blood sugars were running in the 300s all the time. He had no energy. And he was having a hard time going to work because like he didn't have any energy, but didn't know this was like not normal way of being treated for diabetes.
Yeah. Oh, so
I'm not sure what's better, like, you know, this hands-off approach or this like wrong information, because this is definitely a situation of wrong information.
I mean, I think in short term, it's probably worse because your blood sugars are just out of control. Holy crap. And these are doctors that are treating newly diagnosed type 1s.
Well, I mean, so this one I'm talking about is primary care doctor. So, I mean, primary care doctors are not particularly helpful with that type 1 diabetes. They don't know much.
Yeah.
They know enough to be dangerous.
That's a good way of putting it.
I mean, anybody who's had diabetes for more than a week and has had good medical care knows more than most primary care doctors about diabetes.
Yeah. And that leads like perfectly into the title of your book, which is Diabetes Sucks and You Can Handle It. Mm-hmm. And that came out in April of 2020. So April of this year. What I really like is that it emphasizes being honest with yourself about the struggles of type 1.
Yeah.
So I want to find out what made you realize how important that self-honesty is.
Because so back to your question about burnout. One of the things about burnout that we hear people say is diabetes, they try to brush it off. They say, I'm not feeling burnt out. Diabetes is not that big of a deal. And I came to see that was really problematic, because if you blow it off and you say, it's not that big of a deal. I got it. It's not a problem. You're setting yourself up for failure in a couple of different ways. First of all, you have challenges that you have to deal with. In order to manage your blood sugar as well as in order to just live a life that you want to live and do things that you want to do in your life. And if you brush those things away, you're basically paying attention to them by having to push them away. But you're not acknowledging that they're a challenge. You're saying, it's not a challenge, when it really is. You also deny yourself the ability to get support that you need. And you you are just, you're not being, you're being disingenuous to yourself. On the other side, we see people who make diabetes more challenging than it has to be. So honesty works on both sides. It's honesty with yourself that diabetes is challenging, but also honesty with yourself that sometimes the way that you think about diabetes, the way you behave towards diabetes, the way that you talk about diabetes makes it more challenging than it actually is. You know, how many of us have said, I'm always burnt out, or or with our lives, I'm always busy. I'm so busy. And the reality is you're not. The reality is you may have a full schedule, but you have some time, you know, hopefully to sleep. You have some, you have some downtime, even if it's like 2 minutes of downtime, you're not always busy. And so we have, but when you tell yourself that, guess what happens? You start to believe it, and then you become overwhelmed with your life. The same thing is true with our diabetes. If we tell ourselves, I'm always burnt out, diabetes is so challenging, I hate it so much, then that's how we see the world of diabetes. When what would happen if that actually wasn't completely true? What if diabetes is hard, but you can handle it? What if diabetes is, what if you do don't like diabetes very much, but you don't hate it all the time? Sometimes you have a neutral feeling about it. That's much more honest with yourself. And it puts you in a place where you can actually handle the challenges. On either side of those things, if you ignore them or dismiss them, or you make them harder than they have to be, you don't give yourself any kind of opportunity to actually deal with the real challenges that you have. And that's the key, is really to be able to deal with what you have in a realistic way.
I love that. It's like we talk about in the coaching space, the concept of equal airtime. So giving all of the like really stressful, crappy, negative parts of diabetes just as much airtime as all of the things that you are getting because of it, and all the things that you still can enjoy in your life, even though you still have it. So my thing is I've been going on hikes a lot this year. I've been on a mission to do 52 hikes in 2022, which is way more hikes than I've ever done in my entire life in a year. Mm-hmm. And I never would have gotten to that point if I had tried to blame diabetes for all of the reasons why my blood sugars go terrible on the hill. And so I'm like on hike 33. The next one will be 33. Wow. And even though I'll still go low sometimes, I'm not making it a problem because I know how to handle it. I know that I'm going out and doing awesome things. So even though I have to deal with some lows and some highs around it, I'm not holding myself back from doing something I absolutely love doing.
Right. And I think that if you take it outside of diabetes, like that's how life works, right? You're going to have, if you have a job, if you have a partner, if you're doing athletics, it's not always going to be easy. And things are going to come up. You're going to sprain an ankle, or you're going to get in a fight. Those things are going to happen. And how do you deal with those bumps in the road? And sometimes we can have an easier time thinking about those outside of diabetes than we do inside. Because we hear the story a lot of, okay, I'm going to go on a hike, but I can't go on a hike because what if I go low and I'm in the, I'm a mile in or 2 miles in and I run out of glucose. Well, those stories are going to get in your way. But if you think about this from a different perspective of what happens if you're at work and you mess up on a customer interaction and you get in trouble. Can you recover from that? And almost everyone can say yes, but they can't say yes that I can recover from a low blood sugar on a hike because of diabetes. And somehow diabetes has this negative connotation and we see the world through it of impossibility when the rest of our lives, things are actually possible.
It's kind of like we're seeing that huge shadow on the wall. It's really scary, but it's really just a tiny little gremlin on your shoulder.
Yeah, and sometimes it gets bigger. I mean, the gremlin gets bigger and smaller and bigger and smaller, but it's never as big and as in your face and blocking you as you think it is.
I like the analogy of it's sitting in the passenger seat, and sometimes it'll reach its spindly little hand over to the wheel, and you just have to slap it. Do you see a common theme of what's realistic for your type 1 patients?
In terms of what?
Just in terms of like the challenges that they're facing or the things that they need to be honest with themselves about.
Yeah. So I think a couple of them. One is how much work diabetes is. And I don't want to, and don't hear me dismissing that diabetes isn't a lot of work, but I think sometimes people say diabetes is too much work. I have too much on my plate. And the reality is if we really were to take a stopwatch and time how much work you spend on, how much time you spend on working on diabetes every day. I mean, I'm going to be really generous and say it's an hour, but it's not even that. You know, how much time does it take to change your pump site or change your CGM or check your blood sugar? How much time does it take to bolus for your meal? How much time does it take to count carbs? And when I say all those things, it sounds like a lot of work. But the reality is that for those of us who have had diabetes for a while now, or even people who are new to the game, those things become kind of, they become routine. And the thing that's challenging is when people say, it's just too much work. It's like a second job. And it's just not, it's not, if we're realistic and honest with ourselves about that. The other thing that I think is, people need to be honest with themselves about their about low blood sugar. And one, that it's normal. Two, it's going to happen. And three, that they can handle it. They can deal with it. I see a lot of patients who have fear of lows. And sometimes they're debilitating. I mean, really debilitating. And I ask them, what are you scared of? Because the majority of them, I would say that 70% of people that I see who have a fear of low have actually never had a severe low blood sugar. They've never had a low where they needed help. They've had the ambulance call. They've needed glucagon. So they're scared of the possibility, not of the reality. And so what we work on, and what I help them to see, and help them be honest with themselves, is that yes, they're going to go low if they're managing their diabetes well. It's just kind of, it's a consequence of good tight blood sugar control. But that if that happens, that they have the ability to treat it. Like, they're going to be in the right state of mind. They're going to have the access to the resources they need, and their hands are going to work to be able to bring the food to their mouth, and they'll be able to take care of themselves. And many times they're not honest. They can't do that. They think, oh, well, if I go low, I'm all of a sudden dead on the ground before I can even breathe, or I'm going to be so unsteady on my feet, I'm not going to be able to walk across the room to the refrigerator and grab a soda. And the reality is that's not true. And it's funny, because sometimes I'll be talking to a patient, especially over, well, sometimes in person, sometimes over video, and I know I'm going low, and I'll say, what's my blood sugar right now, if you were to guess? And they'll say, I don't know, 180. And I showed them my CGM, and I'm like 65 with an arrow down. And they freak out, and they say, yeah, I'm low and I need to treat my low right now, of course, but am I making sense as I'm talking to you? And they say, yeah, you're making perfect sense, or as much sense as you always make. and am I able to get up right now and walk and go to my drawer and pick out something and have my hand go to my mouth? And they say, yeah. And they're always shocked about that. But then it's always, well, but my diabetes is different than yours. people get in this mindset of like, well, you can do that and you can do that, but everybody else can do it. But my diabetes, I'm in a special case. And then we have to help them be honest with themselves that they're not that special.
I mean, if you want more anecdotes, when I was in elementary school, my number was 26 when my principal physically walked me to the office.
Yeah.
I was ambulatory at 26.
Yeah. I've been there too. I'm ashamed to say, but I have been there too.
So as we start to wrap up a little bit, is there anything that you want to share that we haven't talked about yet?
I wanted to say that, well, yeah, there is. I think that sometimes people think, when they're thinking about their diabetes and mental health, they think about it in a very dichotomous way. They either think, well, I have mental health challenges, or I don't. I'm doing fine, or I'm not doing okay. And I really want people to think about this in more of a continuum, that everyone with diabetes has, I don't want to say mental health challenges, but there are emotional challenges that come along with living with diabetes. And everyone has them. If they tell you they don't, they're lying to you, or they're blissfully ignorant, like I was 23 years ago. But just because you have a emotional challenge, whether it is it's a rough diabetes day and you're just kind of feeling down on yourself, or you're feeling really burnt out, doesn't mean that you're crazy. It doesn't mean you're sick. Doesn't mean you're abnormal. It means that you're human and you have diabetes. It also doesn't mean you need therapy. I mean, and so think about, as you're thinking about the type of mental health support that you want to get or that you need, think about it on a continuum. Maybe listening to this podcast is the mental health support that you need. Not necessarily this episode, but you know, just hearing other people's stories. Maybe it is reading a book like my book or other books that have been written. Maybe it's scrolling Instagram. Maybe it's seeing a professional. But there are all kinds of, there's a whole continuum of support that we can offer. It's not all therapy or nothing. And many of the things that you're doing, that we are all doing, are actually things that support us in our mental health with type 1 diabetes.
I love that. What is one actionable tip that listeners can implement today to improve their lives with type 1 diabetes?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing is to be intentional about your behavior in a couple of ways. One, be intentional about managing your diabetes, because what we know is that ignoring your diabetes is going to actually make it worse, make it more challenging. And so leaning into your management, but then also leaning into the things that you want to do, even if you're scared, even if they don't feel good, because we don't want you being held hostage by your emotions with diabetes. If you say, well, I really want to go for that hike, but I'm feeling too burnt out, or I'm too anxious about my lows. You've all of a sudden taken the power that emotion has and handed it right over to diabetes and said, you know, the power is yours. And as soon as I don't feel that way, then I'm going to do it. What if instead you said, I feel this way and I'm still going to go and go on that hike and see what happens. See if you're able to do that and see what you learn about yourself and about your diabetes by doing it.
I love that. That's the whole mindset of experimentation. Mm-hmm. I was going to go do that. I would just like stuff my backpack full of Smarties and then just watch my phone the whole time for my blood sugars. And well, I've done that.
Well, and so the next step for you is to stuff your backpack full of Smarties, but then let your CGM alerts do the work, and don't look at your CGM until it alerts you.
Oh, I like that. Okay. I'm going to have to put that on my list.
because then you can pay attention to your hike. And not pay attention to your blood sugars. You can't pay attention to things at one time.
Okay, so that actually raises the question where I actually have my headphones in pretty much the whole time. Mm-hmm. And it won't do a beep on my phone, but it will vibrate on my pump. And sometimes I just can't feel the vibrating.
Okay. Well, then you need to adjust your tools so that they will beep in your ears.
Noted.
I mean, I don't want anybody to be reckless, and you want to, course you want to be aware of your blood sugars, but if your CGM settings are set in a place where you're comfortable with, then there's absolutely no reason why you should be looking at your CGM while you're on a hike or while you're watching TV. If you know that it's going to alert you either by vibration or noise while you're out there. Because if it goes above or below where you want it to be, especially if you have alerts that tell you how fast you're going up or down, mm-hmm. Then you really shouldn't be looking at your CGM at all. Now, I'm going to say that I'm probably the most guilty of this. I don't necessarily follow my own advice here. I look at my CGM as well, just like you do. We're all human here. But you know, if we want to think about not letting diabetes get in your way, not thinking about diabetes all the time, let the technology do its job. Yeah. And trust that's going to do its job, and trust that you'll be alerted when there's a problem or when a problem is going to happen or is on the horizon, and then take action. But in the meantime, enjoy the hike.
Enjoy what I'm listening to on the podcast.
Exactly.
What projects are you working on right now that you can share with the audience?
Yeah. So a couple things. I have a membership program that I'm working on improving and developing. It's called the Diabetes Psychologist Membership. It's a program that's on this continuum of mental health support. And what we do is we have weekly coaching calls with me. We have a monthly masterclass. We have a community, as well as a whole library of resources available. And we're going to be opening the doors of membership up again in October. Also, on October the 6th, we are hosting our second annual event called Reimagine T1D, which is a virtual event for people with type 1 diabetes, helping them to manage their mental health better. This year, the focus and the theme is going to be living a value-driven life with type 1 diabetes, so helping you to identify your values in your life with diabetes, your values in your life, and then giving you tools that you can use in order to really live that value-driven life. So it'll be October the 6th. So watch your social media and email for more information.
That sounds awesome.
And it's going to be free.
Oh, even better.
Yeah. totally free event. So we will be, you won't miss it. Hopefully you'll see it all over social media.
All right. If our listeners want to connect with you or get a copy of the book, where can they find you online?
Yeah, they can find me online at thediabetespsychologist.com or at thediabetespsychologist on Instagram. If they want to get a copy of the book, you can find it on Amazon or at my website, thediabetespsychologist.com/book.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Mark, for coming on the show.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
All right. Now it's your turn. Be honest with yourself about the ways diabetes is hard for you and take some time to write down the answers. And pick up a copy of Dr. Mark's book for more journaling prompts just like that. Remember, you control your diabetes. It doesn't control you. Are you ready to feel better with type 1 diabetes without changing how you manage it? You too can go from resenting the highs and the lows to never again feeling like it's dragging your emotions behind the worst roller coaster ever. It starts with a free call. Ready to live your life without worrying about what your CGM says? Head to inspiredforward.com/coaching to get started.